From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage. It's becoming the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And so today on the show, I have somebody who I have respected for a long time. His wife, Danielle, has actually helped me with many of my entrepreneurial ventures over the years. And we're doing a series on my favorite topics, fatherhood, finance, and patriotism. And so as we were talking about, like, who would we want to come on the show, I started thinking about who are the people that I respect most in this area that would bring different perspectives. And so today on the show, we have Colin Rowe. He is in a leadership role in a Fidelity National title. So he's got this background in real estate and leadership, but he's also a father. He's a girl dad, but he's also somebody that I know has a lot of the values I share. So I want to get his perspective on patriotism as well. So, Colin, welcome to the show, my friend.
Oh, thank you very much, Mark. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So let's get just a little bit of your background, and maybe just so our audience can get to know you a little bit, because you're one of these guys that grew up here in the Sacramento region. You grew up in Roseville, as I did. You're a generation below me. I happen to have played Little League with your dad, who's a year older than me. So I've known the Rowe family my entire life at some level, from a distance. Mm-hmm. But now getting to know you through my daughter in real estate and through Danielle, it's good to get the perspective on the younger Rowe.
Yeah, you know, it's been crazy to see Roseville really grow. I never thought I'd be the age where I could tell my kids, back when I was your age, that was a field we used to go play in, where we've just seen it grow so much. And yeah, I moved away for a little bit of time, but this was home. Mm-hmm. You know, families here, four generations, large Italian family. Most of us are still in the 95678 zip code. Mm-hmm. So you never know when a family dinner can go from 4 to 14. Wow. Of, you know, friends and family and everything getting together.
And when you guys get together, do you get together at your house or your parents' house? What happens?
A lot of times at my parents' house, quite a bit at ours. As the summer is heating up, it's now aunts or uncles. They have pools. Mm-hmm. So it rotates to their houses when it's summertime.
Very cool. Now, you live in Diamond Oaks, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So when I was a kid, we lived on a street called Encinel, which ran along the railroad tracks. Mm-hmm. And so the railroad was kind of running through our backyard, if you will. And I remember when they first broke ground on this new development, and we would ride our bikes. I mean, like first grade, even kindergarten, and you know, just learn how to ride a bike, right? So, and you got to, you know, go on this long bike ride up this hill into this place called Diamond Oaks, and it became what I thought was the nicest neighborhood in Roseville. And I think in many ways, it still is. It's a place where I have many friends that live mm-hmm. there. And it's a part of Roseville that is just a gem. And you got a golf course right there in the middle of the neighborhood.
It's right there. I absolutely love it. So when I was a child,
you had two golf courses, I guess.
My cousins, Kyle and Kelly, were the same age. They grew up on Nicholas Circle in Diamond Oaks.
Wow. That didn't exist when I was a kid, by the way.
When I was younger, I would love to live
That's
here.
Like the nicest street
this
in Diamond Oaks.
This is the street I want. And we had just finished a renovation of our old house. And my bride said, we're going to go look at a house. And I said, no, we're not. So we went and looked at the house. And within 30 days, we had sold one house, moved to the renovation. It all came together, but it's
well, there's not really like
it's when so central too.
Yeah,
you know, like
where Diamond Oaks is, it's in West Roseville, and you've got the Diamond Oaks Golf Course, and then you have the Sierra View Country Club right there as well.
Fountains is adjacent to us, as well.
So great shopping right near there. It's not that far from Roseville High School.
Nope. And you can see the Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, can you see it from your?
Oh yeah.
Well, you and
county fireworks on 4th of July in the backyard
and street and like Nicholas. There aren't houses that come up for sale on that street that often because people They want to live there. I feel like in all in Diamond Oaks, it's like this kind of coveted neighborhood. People want to live there, especially longtime Roseville people. They love Diamond Oaks.
Yeah, and we've seen a lot of turnover. When we moved in, there were only a few younger families or couples, and now it's probably quadrupled.
Okay.
In just a handful of years. Our kids have... You know, peer groups their age.
Wow.
On the circle now, which is really neat.
That is cool.
Didn't exist when we first
moved. I can imagine because it's once people, you know, they live there, they retire there, they live there their entire life for a lot of kids.
Most are single stories, which, you know, makes it easier.
Yeah, very cool. Okay, so we're going to talk today about fatherhood, finance, and patriotism. Get your perspective. Maybe I'll share a little bit of my perspective. Let's talk about fatherhood a little bit. So, becoming a dad, you have younger children. You were talking about coaching T-ball, but the moment that your wife gets pregnant, there's this feeling of, hey, I have this responsibility coming. And then once you begin to have once the first kid comes out, there can become this ultimate feeling of responsibility, but the journey is when it really gets interesting. So let me just get your perspective on when you first found out, you know, Danielle's pregnant, and then walk me through that journey of from the emotion of becoming a dad.
It was something that I had never really felt before. I remember when she let me know that we were pregnant.
Oh.
And
How did she let you know?
This is actually kind of funny. She told me to go upstairs. We were at my in-law's house, and I was like, "Oh no, did I do something? What's going on?" And she's like, "Here's a cup." And I'm like, "What is this?" And in the coffee mug was the little test. I looked at it, I'm like, "You what?" She goes, "That's why I've been sick." And I just started crying.
Oh my gosh. I will tell you, Mark.
The previous 3 decades before I became a daddy and more, I think I've cried more in the last 8 years of my life.
Oh my God.
Than I did the previous 3 decades. Like, the girls have softened me. And, you know, tears of joy.
Yeah.
Right? But just that feeling of I have the privilege of being able to help grow a child and seeing who he or she becomes and influence.
And you, are you 40? How old are you?
41.
41, and your oldest is about 8?
She just turned 7.
7? Yeah. Okay, so you had your child. So I had my first kids at, like, I don't know, 23. You're 30, in your early 30s.
I got married at 30, so.
Yeah, you're more mature.
I was about 35.
So you probably have a better, like, a more mature perspective on what fatherhood might mean as a 30-something-year-old than maybe what I had as in the young 20s. So the perspective, like, why were you, that's amazing that you were so touched, and did you cry at that moment?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
And it was something we were trying for a while.
Oh, okay.
And so, like, when that finally, you know, we got that confirmation, it was such a blessing. We were so excited to be able to, and then it was okay, like, let's get the nursery ready, like, let's go. Like, wow. I was so ready. And it was funny, Danielle did not want to find out if it was a boy or a girl. And I was like, no problem, I'll find out. I'll decorate the nursery and just keep it locked. And she was like, you're not decorating the nursery by yourself. We'll find out, which was absolutely amazing.
That's awesome. So you knew it was a girl a few months in?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. I remember, so at 20, so we got married and I was 22, and I think within a month she was pregnant. We weren't trying. Like, you're pregnant? Okay. You know, it was like, what happened? Hey, what caused that type thing? So I felt maybe a different feeling. Mm-hmm. Not that I wasn't happy, but like almost like shock and an overwhelming feeling of it's time to grow up.
A decade of difference, yeah, right? 23, 33, right?
I have to grow up now. I always felt like I was a kid with a serious girlfriend who had just got married to. Mm-hmm. Oh, shoot, she's pregnant. I better grow up. So that was interesting. So, okay, so you're at the hospital, yeah, at the, right, delivering the baby. What was that? Was that scurry around type thing? Was that
was
nervous?
A pretty big scurry for us. We were very blessed to have an incredible nurse in there with us. But at a certain point, you know, she's like, hey, we need some people out. We need people to go. And Nicolette had flatlined, you know, inside of Danielle. It was pretty crazy. The umbilical cord had wrapped around her. And in the course of about 30 seconds, they rushed my bride and my baby to be out of the room and said, we'll come back once we stabilize them and get you.
Oh.
And that was probably a few, maybe seconds or minutes, but could have felt like an eternity because my world had just went out and I was just standing there. And then they came back. We got them. They're stable. Come with me. And we got in there. And I will tell you, I'm a sports guy like you. I've seen a lot of great teamwork. I've never seen better teamwork in my life than the ER. And that whole team working together to save my bride and baby.
Oh, my gosh.
It was such raw emotion of seeing these people I'd never met give their all to save them.
If you could say something to them right now, what would you say?
Thank you for not just what you did for my family, but that's something you signed up for to do daily.
Mm, yeah. What hospital was it?
Kaiser Roseville.
Kaiser Roseville. Wow. That is so touching. Yeah. So everything was good. Everything
we had,
out
we had
good.
Hiccups along the way.
Yeah.
We got to know the ER pretty good, but you know, those things build muscle and help you get stronger. And I feel like it helped create another depth and level of faith and strength in both mine and Danielle's relationship with each other. And just that overall gratitude, like when we got pregnant, what do you want, boy or girl? Healthy, happy. Mm. No, we're really like, I really mean healthy, happy, you know, and when that may not happen, that's really what I cared for, was healthy, happy. And we got healthy. We got happy through some of the struggles.
Yeah. You have two children, seven, and how old's your younger
four.
One? Four, seven, yeah. And four. Are they different? Are they similar?
Oh, they are different. Our oldest, Nicolette, rule follower, a little more soft-spoken. I would say more like me when I was growing up, like my t-shirt was tucked in until high school kind of deal. Noelle is my little wild child. She throws caution to the wind. Very curious, which I absolutely love. Ask questions all the time. Kind of what I wasn't growing up. Mm-hmm. And so I love fanning that flame as
well. Is that how Danielle was? Did she get that from Danielle or is that?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. Cause she's very inquisitive as well.
Interesting. Now you mentioned that, you've had tears of joy. What's the type of thing what memory can you share that would have gives you tears of joy as a dad?
It's so simple. And a lot of times it's the smallest stuff, but as my girls started walking, when I would get home, come in through the garage, and the door would shut, and I would hear them hop down off the couch, little feet running down the hallway, going, Daddy's home! Yeah. And then a huge hug, because I know that that'll stop one day, and I never know when that day is going to be, but I'm going to love every single one of those.
Yeah.
Until they have, like, that's just that simple joy of they're happy to see me.
Being a dad comes with responsibilities. There's a certain role that I think we put upon ourselves that, you know, being a good dad represents. Mm-hmm. What do you feel like your top role is as a dad? Or maybe your top couple roles?
You know, I think the protector, the provider, and the pastor, mm-hmm. you know, for those girls. And I kind of look at it as a shepherd as well, or a sheepdog, where you're going to do whatever it takes to protect them and provide for them and make sure they have the best, even at the sacrifice of yourself, mm-hmm. right? It's for them as a pastor, you know, protecting them from some things, but then exposing them and being there to walk things out with them. The provider, making sure, and not just monetarily, but physically and emotionally, as well, which is hard for me as a one of three boys. Mm-hmm. You know, the emotional side I have to really work on. And then the protector. You know, this world has gotten different since we were younger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, threats can be online sometimes worse than in person. And trying to not totally shelter them, but to protect them from things and environments and expose them along the way.
Now, the pastor piece, I have to imagine, is about communicating your values. Mm-hmm. What, in terms of values, what do you think are the most important values that you want your children to grow up feeling and, you know, being who they are?
Gratitude is huge. Mm-hmm. For me and our family, like, to have that joy, not based on circumstance, but just being grateful. Like, it's simple. My sales team knows this. Be happy that you got to wake up today. Mm-hmm. That's more than a lot of people, right? Having that gratitude is huge. Curiosity. I love that curiosity and that nature of ask questions, look to discover, right? Because I think sometimes as we get older, we're taught to not be as curious and to just go, right? And generosity, compassion. Mm-hmm. You know, we look out for ourselves, but how do we help others as well?
Interesting.
And not just in word, but like in actual action. Not just like, oh, bless you, have a great day. How can we help that day become a little greater for them?
You know, I grew up in a family. I think a lot of this gets passed down probably from your parents to mm-hmm. you and Danielle's parents to her and so on down to your kids. And I grew up in a family that had a family business. Mm-hmm. And my parents had this deep conviction to loyalty to the family, right? So it's like loyalty to your family is all important. And you do nothing if it doesn't help the family, right? It's all about that. And so I feel like I, for that reason, because I was taught that, I believe that. And my wife happened to have a pretty similar upbringing with a mm-hmm. really close family. There's four children in her family. She's one of four. I'm one of four kids. And we both brought this family loyalty to one another. Yeah. And I think my kids, you know, they ended up developing that toward each other as well. And so from a parent perspective, it's one of the proudest things I am of them is that that'd be their loyalty to their family, but also their friends, right? They would do anything for the people that they care about. I love that. So in terms of that, are you seeing those values? I'm seeing that with my kids, but are you already seeing some of that for Nicole and Noel?
Nicolette and Noel.
Yeah.
We do. We see it, you know, with them as being the sisters. Mm-hmm. But also, like, when we ask about school and class or sports teams, you know, hey, this person was feeling sad because of this, so I went over and I gave him a hug mm-hmm. and told him it was going to be okay. Or, you know, that was one of them. Or, you know, Sissy was sad because her she couldn't find her dolly, and so I gave her mine.
Wow. So you that know, generosity just,
it's not
out.
All the time, right? Sometimes they're at yeah. each other. Sisters, but they're also thick as thieves where they're going to have each other's backs. And it's been really neat to see how they've developed relationships outside the family circle with their cousins or, you know, some of our good friends' kids from their schools. You know, we're like, now they're playing soccer and softball with some of those kids. And we're getting to know their families more than just at school, but now it's with soccer and then it's going to be with basketball. And we're developing those new relationships, which are for the girls, but also for us as the parents.
Oh, yeah.
You know, getting to know those parents as well and forging some real relationships. Our kids are together and to be active with that and not passive.
Yes. A lot of our close friends of today are people that I coached with, you know, 30 years ago, mm-hmm. 35 years ago, 25 years ago. And, you know, our kids went to school with them and they became, you know, close family friends. So I imagine you will have that as well with your kids and the parents that that have the same values as well. But let me just ask you about the role of the grandparent, because I didn't have a close relationship with I barely knew my grandparents. I didn't really know them. And I never really thought about what grandparents were all about. My parents, good grandparents, but they both got sick really young. So it really wasn't a big part of what I was thinking about. But now that I'm a grandparent, I think about that. Your dad, we were just talking about, he had shoulder surgery, rotator cuff surgery. What's the role of the grandparent in the Rowe family? Because I think you guys are a great example of like a family to think about emulating.
You know, it's, I'm very lucky. So when I grew up, I was never watched by anyone that wasn't in our family.
Oh.
I was very lucky. I had great grandparents. Even one of my great grandmas got to see me get married 10 years ago
or
11
gosh.
Years ago. That's who watched me. Was grandma, grandpa, great grandma. Our daughters are watched by their great grandma.
Oh my gosh.
And grandma and grandpa. You know, that's who watches them. And it's more than just watch. Like, my mom has all four of her grandkids on Fridays, and my dad. And to see her light up with it, and the girls, like, it's a grandma, grandpa day. You know, maybe we're going to go to the creek. You know, and throw some rocks and skip, or go feed the ducks, or we're going to go pick up one of the cousins at school. I love that. And this is something that is paramount in our family. Like, we're always together. And people go, man, you're always with your family. I'm like, yeah. Like, it's just a default. Like, yeah, we're here and we enjoy each other.
Yeah.
You know, we're together and just... You know, my father had the rotator cuff surgery after T-ball yesterday. We were driving home, and the girls, can we go by grandma and grandpa's to check on grandpa first before we go home? Like, that was no prompting. So we're like, yeah, we can. We're like, let's go. And that is huge. The grandparents' role is we go camping with them, and it's not like we say, hey, let us know if you're taking them somewhere. So we know, we're like, we trust you.
Yeah.
You know, you want to go to the fish hatchery? Go. You want to go to the zoo? Go. Maybe if you want to bring them out of state or overnight, like, let us know. But outside of that, like, it's awesome. And it's fun to see that joy. Like, I always tell them it's the reward for tolerating me for all those years.
That's awesome.
You know, they have that.
That's awesome. Okay, let's talk about finance a little bit. So yeah. I think fatherhood, we could talk about that. You and I could talk about that for hours. But I want to make sure we mix it up a little bit so that there is a little bit of... So one of the reasons we came up with these three topics is these are three of my favorite topics. So fatherhood, I always like to talk about being a dad. It's what makes my world happen. But then, you know, always thinking about the role of a dad. Part of it is that you mentioned, you know, the provider. You know, we got to provide. So part of that has to do with finance. And there's a lot of ways to do that. Obviously, we go to work, we try to make some money and put our money to work if we can set some aside. And I've been dabbling over the last several years in a lot of stuff, right? I've always had my own business, but real estate was some of my first investments. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm invested into, you know, a lot of stuff, including, you know, a lot of startups. But you and I are both... You know, we think about real estate on the regular. So maybe your thoughts on the real estate market as you see it today, because almost everybody that's an adult probably is thinking about someday I got to buy a house or I own a bunch of real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the market look like?
The market is a stable, relatively flat market. Mm-hmm. Is it sexy with low interest rates? No. Our price is dropping a little bit, some areas. The good news with real estate is you only need one buyer and one seller.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with it, I think sometimes we get caught in that COVID era of there were 12 offers, all of them over, closed. Like, that was the anomaly of the real estate market. For the most part, appreciation is 1.5% to 5% a year over a period of time. Interest rates are an average of, you know, 5.5% to 7%. But we got so used to that anomaly, we want it so bad. But what I tell a lot of people is especially if it's a primary residence, it's not just about the appreciation. It's about Christmas, Thanksgiving, and stability for you and your family. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to be paying someone's mortgage, either yours or your landlord's, right? So if you can figure it out, it's a beautiful thing.
What do you say to the people? You hear the, I see this on the news all the time, and then I sort of have a differing opinion, but there's an affordability crisis, right? You, mm-hmm. you hear about, well, young people today can't afford to buy a house, and I hear that, and I empathize with that at some level, but what are you going to do? I always think about, well, what are you going to do about it? You mentioned the idea of buying a house is more than just buying a piece of real estate. Yeah. If it's your residence, you're buying a home. You're buying Christmas. You're buying a lifetime of memories, or at least part of your lifetime mm-hmm. of memories in that house. And over time, that investment, it's going to go up in value over the long run. And so it's something that's good to aspire to do. And I don't know if the timing is right at the moment to buy a house or not, but owning a home is a feeling of accomplishment. And it was extremely difficult to buy a house. When I graduated from high school in 1981, the inflation rate had been off the charts going into that period, mm-hmm. and interest rates were in the high teens. So there was an affordability crisis then as well, but yet I bought my first house in the early 80s, saved up money, set money aside, and I didn't make a lot of money.
Saved up money.
Yeah.
That's, I think, where one of the gaps are.
Yeah.
A lot of people like to spend it on the other things as opposed to that long-term, hey, it's going to take me 3 years of saving, but now I can buy this house. Well, I'll put that off and I'll get this nice purse instead. Right, we're trading short-term or short gratification for that long-term portion, I think. And that's was a shift with some people, you know, as opposed to like, I'm going to make the sacrifice now to not go do those things in order to buy a house. Like when I bought my first house, I think I was 23, and I had some friends, how'd you do that? I'm like, I lived with my parents a few extra years to save money so I could.
Okay, like, so yeah, so listen to this, my friend. So lived with my, it's not a an embarrassment to live with your parents an extra couple of years versus go out and pay somebody rent. I'm going to go out and rent an apartment. If you have the kind of relationship that you know, with your parents mm-hmm. that I hope you have, and you can figure out a way to get them to let you stay there for low rent, no rent. That's what I did as well. And I bought my first house when I was 21, but I had a role model. And this is what I think a lot of people need to be thinking about is like, who's your role model? I had this, my best friend, he bought his first house. Again, we're talking about 1981, not mm-hmm. the good time to buy a house. He bought it on his 18th birthday, which was the day we graduated from high school. You can't buy a house till you're 18.
Yeah.
He graduates from high school. He turns 18 on that day. Happens to be the same day, June 8th. And he buys a house. You know, he saves up money for a down payment, gets an owner to carry, and ends up buying this house. And so at that point, I had been saving money, but not enough to buy a house. And I didn't know any owner carry type mm-hmm. opportunities, but I was motivated. It like, okay, he did it. I can too. Now, it took me 3 years to save up enough money to, you know, get a down payment, but I, at least I had a goal, right? So it gave me a reason to do it. And I think that's part of what people need is sort of a reason, because anybody can start setting money aside.
And that shows who's your five, right?
Yeah.
Where they were aspiring for more, you're like, I want to do it too, mm-hmm. as opposed to, yeah, that's for other people, or I'm not going to do that.
Right.
No, but you can.
Yeah, anybody.
Like sometimes
can.
The opportunity is in, are you going to choose to pursue it or not pursue it? Intention over action.
Anybody can go get a job at Starbucks while they're going to college, right? We can all, and then you can save that, or while you're not going to college, you quit. You know, you can go get a job in construction when you get out of high school. Whatever, you can save the money that you make from your job toward the down payment, and it might take years.
Yeah.
And
but if you really want it, you could. I just heard the story of one of the chicken finger guys, one of the chicken stores.
Okay.
He graduated high school. He went up and worked in Alaska on the boats, on the fishing boats, saved his money for 3 years, and built his very first chicken stand in Louisiana. And now he has franchises everywhere. But his friends are like, "You're crazy. What are you doing?" "I believe in it."
Yeah.
And so he went and worked those boats, you know, crazy ocean up in Alaska for 3 years.
That's actually a great idea because you don't really have to go pay rec.
He's like, "I couldn't spend any money. I'm on the boat, right?" But like, it was that hard? Yeah. But his why was bigger than the hard. Mm. And so he did it. I just heard that story. I was like, that is crazy.
Yeah.
And you think about real estate, and this is something that I think a lot of people lose sight of. I never do, but it's one of the fewer investments that you can use leverage. So you can you can put 10 to 20% down on a, you know, let's say you buy a $500,000 house, you can put $50,000, $100,000 down, and you have a $500,000 investment. And that, you know, that it's the $500,000 that goes up in value, but yet you only had to put out $50,000. So it's like, wow, use other people's money to make a pretty big investment into something that I think a lot of us know that over time we're likely to have inflation. And so it's one of the few that you can do that with.
And you can have the long-term rental or the short-term rental that wasn't around, you know, until about 10 years ago, right?
Yes.
It's
and that's an interesting thing too. My first house was actually a duplex where I bought two halfplexes side by side. Okay. I lived in one and got a roommate that basically almost made my payment for my half, my side, you know, about half that. And then I had someone paying me rent on the other to offset that. It didn't quite cash flow, but you know.
But you the appreciation.
Yeah, I used my my paycheck to pay the, you know, my burn rate.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it can be done is my point.
It can, and it's not easy, but like it wasn't easy for you then either. And some people, well, it's easy. Like that's the rearview mirror. It feels easy because it was in the past, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing, like in most things worthwhile, do come with a little bit of sacrifice, right? Like we don't post a picture, just climb the stairs today. No, I just climbed the mountaintop, right? Like that's the cool stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. And maybe, again, some of this feels like a victim mentality. So, but people blaming social media for, you know, people post things about how great, how happy they are and all the great things they're doing. And it makes me feel sad or inferior or whatever. And it's like, oh man, I see happy people. I'm happy for them.
And
I'm not seeing bragging.
Comparison is the thief of all joy.
Yeah.
Right? Like celebrate their victories and let it motivate you. But like, don't be envious. Mm-hmm. Like that comparison is the thief of all joy. Yeah. And like, that's our goal. Like I used to joke when I was really happy when I lived in North Carolina, making about 42 cents an hour and had like four drawers full of clothes. I was super happy then. That's what I had when I was out there. Super happy. Didn't have a house, didn't have a car, none of that. But I was ecstatic.
Yeah.
You know, like those things don't buy it.
Yeah. One of the things that, so I lived in this, I call it the sexplex now, looking back at it. So that's where my wife, when we got married, that's where she moved into. I had already bought the house.
Did you have a sign up that said that?
I had posters on the wall that would give you the idea, but I had to rip those down when we got married. But it's been kind of like an emotional insurance policy for me. So, you know, I've built some businesses and it's been risky and it's been a little tenuous at times, a little iffy. And, but I always had this, I call it emotional insurance policy. Like if I lose it all, you know, all I need is the love of a good woman, a hot shower, and the sexplex. I can go back to that duplex anytime. I could lose the bigger house that I had bought. It doesn't matter. I can go back and be in an entry-level house again. And it's really all we need is something that feels like home.
That is so true, man. Like, and when we talk about stuff, I was thinking about it when I was driving here. Some of my favorite memories with our family, we've gone to really cool places and done really cool things. Some of my favorite memories are going to get a Frosty over at Taylor's. You know, something really simple. Or this weekend, it was windy, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We flew a kite in the backyard.
Oh, wow.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't have to be like, oh, we're in Hawaii. We went to the Iwani. It's fun. We have a great time there. But like the simple pleasures are the ones where I'll like find myself sitting back going, this is pretty cool.
That's awesome. Okay. You know? So yeah, last night.
And just like you with, you know, the duplex and the simplicity, like probably rent for you. Sitting around the fire with your family.
Yes. And
right?
Last,
like
one of the things I love to do, I have this, Jeep that's a beater. It's a like I think it has a top, but I've never put the top on. Uh-huh. I bought it used during COVID, and I was like, you know, my daughter Ashley had bought this used Jeep, and I'm like, oh, that looks kind of cool. I want to get one too. So I think I paid like $5,000 for this used Jeep, and so it goes like 50 miles an hour. I barely even take it out, but I ride it around my property, and so that's something that my wife and I like to do is like jump in the. In this old Jeep, and she gets a glass of wine, I get a beer, and we just drive around, and invariably, we're going to run into one of our grandkids out there. That's what happened last night. A couple of the grandkids, the little ones, jump in the Jeep with us, and we go looking for animals. We saw some deer, and it was just a simple thing of putting around with your grandkids in a piece of crap Jeep, doing nothing, basically. See some other grandkids out riding a bike, and it's the simplest things in life that have nothing to do with Hawaii, as you mentioned, right?
Yeah. It's that presence. And one of the things I learned at the beginning of the year, I went to a kind of a work retreat. It was awesome. Got a great bunch of great work stuff. But one of the speakers said something. I went up to him after. I said, I got a lot of great business stuff. But what you said this morning at our 7 o'clock meeting was the thing that made the most impact. And he said this, proximity does not equal presence. Wherever you are and whoever you're with, be fully engaged. Don't just be present. And he talked to us about a story where his wife was like, get off your phone. Your daughter's been trying to talk to you for 10 minutes. He was like, I had no clue. I was on my phone, on the couch. And he's like, and I realized, I was like, oh, I'm with her. Jesus, but I wasn't. And that was like such a big reminder for me to be present. Mm-hmm. You know, just like you were with your wife and with the grandkids, like, don't just be there.
Yeah.
But like,
I think
be
all,
there.
Yeah, be, that's
there's
a great
such
reminder.
A difference. Like now when I get home from work, my phone goes on the counter for an hour.
Wow.
Like I'm not a surgeon. It's not life or death. But I can see most of the time there's a difference with Danielle and me and the girls because I'm not distracted by that thing vibrating with an alert. We get to like be there.
Yeah. That's kind of a slap upside my face because I'm guilty of it's interesting how you hear people laughing about other people and then you know, like, oh, I saw these teenagers and there was four of them in a group and they all had their phones out and they weren't even talking to each other. And I think it's a reflection on where we're at as a society. And, you know, I think our, you know, it's what you and I didn't have that as a kid. Mm-hmm. You may have had that at some level. When did you get your first cell phone?
I think it was a junior in high school.
Okay, so you got
but it was like
pretty young.
You had to hit like the 2 button 3 times for C. Like you weren't texting.
Yeah, you weren't probably not a lot
it
of social
snake
media.
On it. Like it was...
Okay, so, and I didn't have that at all, but I find myself now, you know, addicted to my phone and, you know, but it's way more prevalent within teenagers. I see it myself, but I see it even in, you know, older adults. And so, yeah, I think it's something that we probably all need to think about, and especially when we're in a kind of a leadership role, if you're a parent or a grandparent or something, you've got to lead by example at some level.
Yeah, and I think that's the... lead by example, not just what you say, but how we do, what we do. And when we do mess up as a leader, own it. Mm-hmm. Hey, I wasn't there like I should have been. I apologize. And we're going to grow through this as opposed to greasing over, like learning to be humble enough to go learn from this, you know, and how do we get better as opposed to excusing it the way out, but going like, I want to get better at this now.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go into our last subject, and that is patriotism.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear the word patriotism, like, what comes to mind? Is do you feel like you have a definition for that, or what does that mean to Colin Rowe?
You know, for Colin Rowe, it means being thankful and grateful that I was born in this country with the opportunities that I have, even with her flaws.
Mm.
In action. Not just saying, oh, this was great, I'm thankful, but showing up. You know, and that could be, you know, lightly involved in like civic duty. I'm on a county board and I've done different things, but supporting veteran organizations, you know, and active duty as well, and teaching our kids to be thankful and grateful, you know, and not just on Veterans Day or Memorial Day, but every day. You know, you see someone with a hat, you can walk over and say thank you, you know, and appreciate. Really? Yeah. You know, with those things, you know, by grace, not by anything else, like born in this amazing country where we all have the chance. You know, some are harder than others, right? But there's better opportunity here than I would say every other country in the world. And it's still the best. And I believe the best is yet to come for this country.
Yeah.
And that excites me. And hopefully I'm still around to see it. You know,
I love that. I love that. You know, you went to that David Garibaldi thing with us, right? And Danielle? Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
And for those of you, I've never talked about this on the show. I don't know if I really talk about it much, if ever. But David Garibaldi is a local artist who is phenomenal. He's also an entertainer of sorts. Like, so he'll paint a picture and it's upside down, but he's still painting it, and he's painting it to music and splashing. He's like an athlete because he's jumping around as he's painting. And you're like, what is he doing? It looks like some kind of modern art. And then at the end of the painting, he flips it over. So he painted a picture for me that I had got in some auction. And so I didn't know what it was. He's like, Mark, because I know him, he's been on my show and stuff, mm-hmm. and he's just a great guy, super supportive of our veteran organization, as you and Danielle have been as well. And he's like, I want to paint you something that I think you would appreciate. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I trust you. Go ahead. Instead of me saying, hey, paint me a picture of Abraham Lincoln, he's like, I want to surprise you. And so we got a group together and we all went down there to watch him,
yeah.
you know, do the painting live. And it turns out it's one of the most patriotic. It's an example of one of the times that I felt super patriotic in my life. So he's painting this picture to music and we're learning about him and his artistry, and he flips over the painting and it's of the firefighters, the first responders after 9/11, raising the flagpole in the middle of the rubble. And it's a beautiful painting. It's up at our little clubhouse, and it was just amazing. Yeah. And I think back to that moment, and you would have been at that age. You had probably been about a freshman in high school or something like that.
I was a junior in high school. I remember pulling up to pick up my one of my buddies on the way to school, and his mom answered the door crying.
Yeah,
and I was like, "What happened?" And that's when we found out.
And remember, think about how divided we seem to be today.
Yeah.
And then on that day and at those moments, we're united as a country in a way that I've always respected. I want that back for America, and I feel like that can happen. So just my final question is, if, you know, we're hitting our 250th birthday, right? Yeah. So as a country, and, you know, if I was to write a birthday card to America for their 250th, I would say that I know that it is going to be filled with challenges and infighting, and we faced a lot of tough times as a country. The revolution, the Civil War, the World Wars, the infighting of the 60s, and how divided we sometimes seem today. Mm-hmm. But we can get back the way we felt as we came together at 9/11. And I believe in what we've built. I think we're the greatest country in the world, and we will find those great moments again in our next 250 years. So if I was to write a card, it might say something like that. What kind of message would you give to America for its 250th birthday?
It's an interesting question. I would say, thank you for bringing us where we are. Mm. May we have vision for where we're going together, right? Focus on what we have in common. Let the 5% of differences not overtake the 95%. And don't let someone on TV tell you how you should feel about something, because that's your choice. I think goes back to that curiosity. Just because someone says it or writes it doesn't make it true. And unity is a beautiful thing. That doesn't mean we're all imperfect, right? So we shouldn't expect our country to be perfect. We're here, so it's not going to be. But let's pursue the best. Instead of making excuses for how it's not going to be perfect, let's pursue pretty darn good. And we'll probably hit that. But if we pursue excuses, we'll probably hit that too. So let's reach our potential, America. Let's do it.
Colin Rowe, he is the man. You can see why I respect him so much. Thank you for joining me on the show today, Colin. Very touching, very thoughtful, and inspirational as well. So thank you.
Thank you for having me, Mark. Appreciate you, man. Gotcha.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you, we're never below you, always by your side.